How could
be the same?
But it was the same, with conditions as they were, that it could have been avoided. Although back earlier than that, in the 1840s, if we'd had the right sort of leadership, I think it could have been avoided. And the only way it could have been avoided would have been to persuade the Southerners that slavery was wrong and they ought to abolish it and let them do it themselves. But at the time that the war came on, that was an impossibility.
Well, now, from the days of Washington right up to Buchanan, there was a constant pressure and a growing pressure involving the question of slavery. And yet, it's been accumulating, yet no predecessor of Lincoln had taken any kind of a forthright position on the question.
Well, the only forthright position that had been taken had been Henry Clay in these two compromises, the Missouri Compromise and the Compromise of 1850. And the object of the Southerners was to be sure that they were not overwhelmed in the Congress of the United States. That's the reason Texas was submitted with the provision that Texas with 10 senators in the Senate, And the idea was to keep the Missouri Compromise, which is 3630, all the way to the Pacific Coast. And of course, when old Stephen A. Douglas got his bill through, which was the one that really was the main cause of the downfall of the peace between the South and the North. He wanted to allow the territories to decide on whether they should be slave or free north of 3630, and that's what caused the trouble.
Well, that had to do with the with the pressure to prevent the spread of slavery, but there was no one who was trying to overcome or curb the slavery where it was already entrenched in the South.
No, it was the spread of slavery. It was already in effect.
But when you speak of Henry Clay, he didn't actually take up any question. He merely yielded to the pressures that were already being expressed in the country.
Henry Clay was trying to prevent a war between the states, and that's what he did with these two compromises.
Was war at that time beginning to seem imminent?
No question about it. There's no question about it. And when you get the Kansas-Nebraska bill, which old Steve Douglas was the author, and when you get the repeal of the Missouri Compromise, which Franklin Pierce did, then the trouble was on and the war was unavoidable.
In other words, what you're saying, Mr. President, that the issue which began to develop, which culminated in the war, was really an issue of not of doing away with slavery, but to prevent the spread of slavery.
The spread, that's right. To prevent the spread of slavery. And to prevent the Congress from becoming unbalanced between the North and the South.
And so that any question of abolishing slavery would be something that time would have to take care of.
That's right.
But what was really in the balance was the move to stop the spread of slavery. And at the same time, the Southerners feeling that they didn't want to be thrown out of balance in power.
That's right. But to stop the spread of slavery north of 3630,
yes.
South of it didn't make any difference.
Well, now, didn't it make a great big difference in view of the general climate that was developing in many, many parts of the world, that the trend was definitely against that kind of human relations as between
that kind of labor.
That kind of labor,
that's
all right.
Right. Well, yes, that's true. All the world began to awaken to the fact that, of course, slavery never was right and should never have been instituted. But then, under the circumstances we had, and as old Cleveland said, it was a condition and not a
Not a theory.
That's
now, but Mr. President, Lincoln has, of course, taken the position that slavery was wrong, and that if let alone in 100 years, with the help of the Lord, as he said, if this would be wiped out anyway, it couldn't
right.
exist.
He was right.
But again, we've raised this with you several times. This, if slavery is wrong, with so many voices in the country, particularly from the North, why did it persist? Why didn't a president take a very strong position long before it became a matter of war?
Because he couldn't be elected if he did. That's the principal reason.
So politically, it was inexpedient up to the time of Lincoln to make
yes,
that instance, including
Lincoln. Inexpedient even up to Lincoln's time and in Lincoln's time.
And of course, it was politically inexpedient because, as you stated, there was an economic basis for the conflict.
That's right.
In other words,
entirely economic.
In other words, that the South used slave labor to compensate against the advantages that the North had in industry.
Well, and now the South is coming back as an industrial center, and they're not worried about the situation anymore.
Well, that the industrialization of the South has done a great deal to open up the economic opportunities for all that they could get. But the liberation of the slave, of the emancipation of the slave, didn't really materialize either economically or politically after the war between the states.
No, it didn't. Not for 30, 40 years. Not until the Spanish-American War and the First World War was the thing really worked out to a point where it was satisfactory to both sides.
Well, in that sense, would you say, as a former president, that war was fought in vain?
No, I wouldn't. It had to be fought. The meat situation in which they were faced, and nobody could have prevented it. I don't care what all the after-the-fact historians say. There was nothing in the world that could have prevented it. It had to be fought.
In other words, what you're suggesting, Mr. President, is that war is frequently a result from the inability of men to reach an agreement, and
therefore it's
almost a breakdown.
That's what it is, nothing else.
Well, it's more than reaching an agreement. In the case of the South, they were so heavily outnumbered and outweighted in many respects. That the compulsion they had to go to war was almost on the fanatical side, or was fanatical, because they were embarked upon a war that, on paper at least, they knew they had to lose.
They didn't think so. They didn't pay any attention to the paper. They thought that one of their companies was worth a division on the other side, and they were wrong. But they didn't find it out until they got whipped.
Well, that was part of the chest pounding stuff, where they said three Southerners will whip a division, or one Southerner is equal to three Northerners.
That's understandable bravado of all peoples and nations. May I ask you a very iffy question, since we're in this domain of iffiness? Supposing there had been some far advanced statesmen in that period who attempted to deal with slavery by saying, we will compensate the South by some economic advantage, or by some balance which will prevent the South from losing. When
we went into that
slavery.
Yesterday. It's on the record.
Was it?
That was covered yesterday. But.
Well, in this specific thing?
What's the question?
Might the situation have been avoided if somebody had said to themselves, well, let's compensate you for this?
It might have, but you can't tell.
Brother, we're talking about a bond issue and all kinds of things.
You know, the main difficulty was that the Southern setup was a family affair, and the slaves were part of the family, and they were just as fond of the slaves as they were of their children. And that's one of the things that would have prevented the thing that you're talking about.
In other words, it would have prevented any economic consideration.
Yeah, economic didn't enter into it, just personal. And the heart situation, which has to do with, well, suppose you adopt a child. You're not going to throw him out. Somebody wants you to. And that's what they were up against in most of the southern situations. Although there was a part of the southern slave program that was a terrible thing. And I think the general who joined the Confederacy at 41 and became a lieutenant general can explain that better than anybody else in his memoirs, which have been written. But he was a slave dealer in Memphis. And after he fought the war between the states, came to the conclusion that it was wrong. And that's the answer to this.
And that was?
The great southern general of the cavalry, Nathan Bedford Forrest. And if you read his history, which is written three or four times, you'll find that he was one of the greatest leaders of men. He didn't stay back behind and say, boys, we go here and there, take a pick handle and say, come on, boys, you're going to take them. And they did.
And he felt after on reflection.
He felt after on reflection, he'd been a slave dealer in Memphis, that the proper thing was to have taken care of these poor slaves in the proper way, and the war would not have been necessary. And you find, if you read these stories of Nathan Bedford Forrest, that that's correct.
What about, while we're on that subject, can we ask you again about the, he founded the Ku Klux, didn't he? Can you give
us... He founded the Ku Klux and then broke it up when he found it that it went wrong. He resigned and tried to destroy it, but didn't have it enough.
And he thought it went wrong for what reason?
Because they went outside their scope of the point for which they were raised, which is to protect the very people that afterwards were persecuted.
In other words, Ku Klux was founded by him in order to protect the
slaves, the released slaves.
Yes.
So that they could have a place to work and be taken care of without in any way interfering with their former masters in the way of murdering them or doing things of that kind. And when he found out that the Ku Klux became a political outfit, he tried to break it up, but didn't have any luck.
And that story is never told. Emphasized very much that he had opposed that.
It's never told.
In other words, for you, the KKK was perverted for political purposes.
And anything of that kind always is. Now Red Cross even is used for that same purpose.
Where?
Everywhere.
Oh, I see. Not down there.
No, everywhere.
Now, when you reflect on the thing some more, you brought up an interesting point that this was a family relationship. Could they have liberated the slaves, or at least kept the slaves by putting them on a compensation basis, where and given them the right of movement?
Well, in this day and age, we think they could, but at that time they didn't think so. And you've got to take the thing into consideration for the time that it happened, and I don't think it could have been done at that time. Although that would have been a settlement under our present conditions.
This is the other tape, number one, the morning of January 6th, 1961. This is tape number two, the morning of January 6th, 1961, the President, Noyes Hillman, President. The rest of the
day. Well, the next important question is back to whether or not any of the expected results of the war had been put into effect.
May I interrupt there? I want to go back to the last thing that you talked about before we get into that area. You said that the slave situation involved a family sort of setup.
That's right.
In other words, any challenge to the slave system was also a challenge to the social setup, to the way of life of many of the people there.
Well, that's true, except where there was a commercial program in effect where the great plantation owners were using the slaves for their own welfare and benefit to make money. Now, in most of the families of the South, the ordinary families, the slaves were a part of the family, just same as the wife and children of the whole family. But there were commercial aspects to the thing which brought about the situation that caused the Civil War.
I think that balances the picture whether they used the slaves for commercial purposes in
right.
the economic war.
That's right.
Well, all in all, the word slave was not a uniform tag put on all the retainers. Some of the slaves were not really slaves in that sense of the word, were they?
No. And you find in a great many instances that the family, when the head of the house died, freed the slaves and made them citizens. That went through the whole layout. But the commercial end of the thing is what caused the attitude that Harriet Beecher Stowe and the people north of Mason-Dixon line thought was general. It wasn't.
But most of the abuses and the offenses that were committed against the so-called slaves were by a relative minority of the landowners of the South.
There's no question about that. There's no question about that.
Has there ever been a study ever made of the extent to which people were enslaved, the cruelty and that sort of thing? It's a very interesting angle.
I don't think any effort has been made to study that. But if you study what the Spaniards did to the Indians in Mexico and Peru, in Cuba, and in every other place where they had control, you will find what that really means. The Spaniards were very, very cruel to the people under them. And to some extent, that was true of all the white races who came to the Western Hemisphere. But the Spaniards were the worst.
Now, we didn't provide for any relocation and care of the Negroes once they were liberated.
That was because of the assassination of Lincoln. He had that in view and hoped that it could be worked out. But it killed him at the crucial time, and Andrew Johnson tried to carry out his program, and the radicals in the Congress, old Thad Stevens, about whom I was reading last night, was the principal cause of the reconstruction of the South that caused all the difficulty that took at least 40 years to work out.
What did Lincoln have in mind specifically to...
He was hoping that the freed slaves could be made citizens by education, and that there was enough public land in the West so that they could have their own economic setup in a landway, which was what everybody wanted to do during that period.
Now, was he going to transport them, evacuate the Negroes from the South?
I don't know what he was going to do. Nobody does, because he was killed before he got the outlines program. But I'm contemplating that that's what he had in mind.
Well, was that even in any kind of discussion? Was there any suggestion made that that's what they were going to do?
No, the only discussion that came about was that Lincoln wanted to see that the freed slaves had a chance to be economically independent. And the only way he could have done it was to take the free land and see that they were.
Where was that free land?
All over the West, Northwest and West. That free land was west of the Mississippi River all the way to the Pacific coast, and was finally settled by homesteaders, most of whom were allowed 160 acres. But I think Lincoln had in view that he would take these freed slaves and give them a chance to be economically capable of taking care of themselves. But nobody knows what he could have done because he died too soon.
Well, the South... In other words, as far as you know, there are no details of any plans that he had in mind.
No, there aren't.
But that was his overall conception to do something.
That was his conception to see that the free slaves had a chance to be economically self-supporting.
What actually did happen, Mr. President?
Oh, well, nothing happened. Nothing.
What happened to the
Andrew Negro? Johnson tried his best to carry out the Reconstruction Plan of Lincoln. The radicals wouldn't let him. And the South then was burdened with the freed slaves. And they took every kind of a chance to prevent their getting control of the rule of the southern states. And it's been going on ever since.
Would you repeat that, Mr. President? That's pretty important. In other words, ever since that time, the South has tried to prevent the more populous Negro...
Controlling the whites in the South. Same thing is happening in other parts of the world, but then you find that the approach in the South was a kindly approach to the Negro. And where they've gone north, they've got tremendous populations in Chicago and New York and St. Louis and Los Angeles and other places. They are much more, they're treated much more as an inferior race than they are in the South, you understand them.
Now, the Southern whites were outnumbered about 3-2 by the Negroes, and they were afraid of, or some or other.
It was the other way around. There were 5 million white people in the South at the time of the census of 1850, and 3,500,000 Negroes. And they never, only in certain sections were the whites outnumbered by the Negroes. Those sections have been in Mississippi and parts of other southern states. But to begin with, after the war between the states, the population was about 5-3, white 5-3, colored.
Well, now, the colored people were completely abandoned then in the South by the government and by the people.
Yes, that's right. After they had, after the old Thad Stevens and his crowd had tried to put them in control of the South, which caused Nathan Bedford Forrest to organize the Ku Klux so it couldn't happen.
Now, how did they try to put the Negroes in control?
Well, if you read the history of the thing, you'll find that the radicals wanted to treat the southern states as territories and set up territorial government under the control of the federal government, and the South wouldn't stand for it. And then that caused all sorts of trouble, but finally was worked out by the readmittance of the states, because Lincoln's idea was that the states had never left the Union, that they were still a part of the Union. And Thad Stevens didn't believe in that. He wanted to keep them as conquered territory. I can tell you.
Mr. President, why was Thad Stevens so opposed to... Reconstruction of the South without making it territorial or conquered country?
Because he was of the opinion that the South should be treated as conquered territory, that they should not be allowed to come back into the Union except through a territorial setup so that the Congress would have control of it. He was very bitter against the South, and he's charged with the fact that his iron and steel mill in Pennsylvania at Gettysburg was destroyed by the Confederate soldiers when Lee was in that neighborhood. But the facts in the case are, he was bitter against the South because he didn't want to see the South, after the war was over, admitted to the Union on the same basis on which Lincoln claimed they never went out, and that was what the trouble was. And Andrew Johnson was trying to put that situation into effect. And Andrew Johnson, and Thad Stevens were bitter enemies because Johnson was a Southern Union Democrat. And Stevens was one of these Northern radicals who wanted to pulverize the South. And as the leader of the House of Representatives, he almost succeeded in doing it.
Well, Mr. President, then his opposition was based not only on some personal bitterness, either because of his own interests, economic interests, or because of political ambition, but also it was based, whether it was good or bad, on some basic principle, and that principle was that the defeated enemy should be treated as an enemy.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Well,
that's what he wanted. He wanted to treat the South as a conquered territory, and Lincoln and Andrew Johnson didn't.
Well, there were two. There were actually, the Republicans were split into two groups. There were the Radical Republicans and the Moderate Republicans, and the Stevens headed up this committee of 15, which took away the administration of Reconstruction from the executive to over to assumed it by Congress.
As things went along, Stevens and his crowd tried to eliminate the executive as the executive of the United States, and it took nearly 20 years to repeal some of the vicious laws which were passed because they were unconstitutional.
Well, that's Mr. President.
The law that was passed that prevented the president from the control of his cabinet. And it was, I forget the name of the law, but it's in the record somewhere.
That was applied to Johnson, though, not to Lincoln.
Yes, it was after Lincoln died that these things were done. And it was in 18, I think, along the 1880s before the Supreme Court decided that that law, which prevented the president from firing his cabinet, really felt like it was unconstitutional. I forget what the name of the law is. You'll have to look it up.
There was another, we'll look that up. There's another basic thing. Lincoln suggested proposed that by a vote of 10% of those who were recorded in the previous election, or the election of 60, any state could apply for readmission.
That's correct.
And the Stevens crowd insisted that it had to be a majority of all those that voted.
That's
and they had, all they had to do was swear to the Constitution, to uphold the Constitution of the 13th Amendment, they were automatically readmitted.
That's right, but then Stevens didn't want that done. And he succeeded in preventing its being done because of his inability to try to get along with Johnson. And it's a most interesting story of that period. But Pat Stevens was one of the worst men that ever had anything to do with the control of the government of the United States.
Well, this is a very interesting case, again, Mr. President, of a leader who took on a very daring thing by his Emancipation Proclamation, but who had taken a moderate course and an understanding course with respect to the problems that he had to deal with in the adversary. And he was defeated in the main objectives of his program by a radical group. And we would like to have some...
And by an assassin. Had he not been assassinated, then we would have had, I think, a better approach to the situation. But he was shot a short time after he took office on his second term. And I think that's what the trouble was.
This is the end of second tape by the morning of January 6, 1961. Mr. President, we'd like to come back to this.
This is the big problem.